Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Carlos Carrasco coming off a tremendous start. Swung on and missed. He struck him out. Number 200 on the year for Carrasco. Swing and a miss. He got him. Number 9 for Carrasco. In the second inning for the second time.
Well, he smokes this one in the gap. That'll get down and go to the wall. This will clear the bases. Diaz scores. Gomes scores. Look at Greg Allen flying home. Frankie's going for 3 and he is safe. And Ramirez jolts it deep right and go.
The man with more extra base hits than anybody in the league has just belted his 26th homer. 79 extra base hits on the year for Jose Ramirez, and it's now 7-0 Cleveland. Swings at the first pitch, pops it in the air, left field, shallow, Guyer racing in, makes the catch, and the Indians march on, 19 in a row.
Carrasco's performance, once again, he goes out there today, and it's also a shout out for him. He gave us a chance to win, and we did it. You know, we went out, put a lot of runs, and then the guys that came late in the game, they came in and did their job again. That's what we've been saying all along, that every time you put someone on the field, they do something. That's what we live for, you know, is trying to help the team win. And whenever you got someone on base and you drive him in, it makes you feel good about yourself because you helping the team that day. We pay attention because you guys bring it up. You know, we just enjoying the ride and just trying to focus on what we have in front of our feet.
I get it. I just don't feel like going there. I think it sends the wrong message. Our message is always consistent that, hey, show up and try to outplay them today. They're doing a really good job of that. I think to be a good team, spreading out games is important, and the guys have done a really good job of that. We haven't had to tax our bullpen. You know, we've been able to get a lot of guys in games, so everybody feels like, you know, they're part of what we're doing. It hit his bat first. I mean, he had actually a decent bruise on his forearm, but I think he was more just trying to get out of the way, and I think it kind of stunned him. But, yeah, he's fine.
Cleveland Indians, 19 consecutive victories. They go for the American League record later today with 20. That was set by the Oakland Athletics in 2002. And I got to tell you, I can't come up with another team that I can remember in the time since I started following baseball that was this dominant as the Indians are. I don't think this is a case of Terry Francona being a stick in the mud. I think he understands 17 years of managing how to handle these situations. And also, he's been on the other side of it with the baseball gods, right? 2011 with the chicken and beer Red Sox, the epic collapse in September. I'm sure he's not taking anything for granted.
Yeah, you know, if you're an Indians fan or an Indians person, there's two things you probably have to fret about. One is Andrew Miller's knee, and the other is please don't peak too early. You know, you can't maintain this pace. They almost have to hope that they get to this streak, and then maybe they lose 3 in a row or something. You're not going to win every single game the rest of the way out. There's a thing called regression, and at some point you wonder, you know, can you continue to play this well, but they just seem to be, you know, so sound.
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Welcome indeed to the Extravaganza right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. We are Toledo's sports leader. Hope you're having an outstanding day today. It cannot be much better than the days the Indians are having. Back to back to back to back to back to back to back. I can't do it 19 times, Chris. I went out of here.
But it will run out of show, too.
What's that, Jim?
We'll run out of show, too.
Run out of show, too, yeah, if I do that long enough. But you know what? Why don't you kill that music here, because I think I have a better way to do this today, just to kind of play producer if I can for a moment here, because I feel like there's something that needs to be in the background pretty much of everything that we do today, at least until 20. A little Steely Dan for you, get you through an afternoon drive. Help you get from where you are to where you want to be. Afternoon Drive FM Radio, right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Classic rock. All I know is I'm watching what happened last night, Kushlin, and two things came into mind. Number one was Steely Dan with A19, and the other one was Paul Hardcastle Paul Hardcastle. I didn't want to hear. Hold on there a second. Steely Dan, I can only do you each one at a time, for crying out loud. I only have one track. but hold on a second. Let me get to the other one. You remember Paul Hardcastle, do you not?
A little bit, yeah. A little bit, yeah.
Do you? This song has got to be, ooh, goodness God. I want to say mid-'80s, maybe early 80s, like 84, 5, somewhere in that neighborhood is where I'm going to go with it. Paul Hardcastle. It's an anti-war song is what it is. But all I know is it features... That was a little bit hot. 19. It was called 19.
Right.
It was about the Vietnam War and how the average age of the Vietnam War veteran is only 19 years old compared to 26 in World War II. It's one of those goofy songs, but anything having to do with 19, because Kush, this can't happen. What's happening right now with the Cleveland Indians cannot happen. It can't happen. It wouldn't happen. It shouldn't happen. It won't happen. It's not happening. We're imagining this. Is the only way that I can possibly frame it. The only way that I can wrap my own brain around it. It's not really happening. Because you don't win 19 baseball games in a row in 2017. You don't win that many games in a row in a time of parity unless you are, you know, the $250 million payroll Dodgers, who at one point this season looked like they could win 15, 16, 19 games in a row when they were 91-36 and threatening on a pace to break the all-time single-season wins record. You might be able to say, well, if anybody can, they can, but look at the payroll. Look at what they've done. Look at how they've bought it, if you will. And so, therefore, maybe it's a little bit understandable. Beyond that, you don't win 19 consecutive baseball games. And, of course, it should be worth, you know, it is worth noting, and we should point out that the flip side of that story for the Los Angeles Dodgers is while they won 91 games against just 36 losses, since that time, they have lost 16 out of their last 17 and 11 in a row. And, oh, by the way, that is the longest single losing streak that the Dodgers have suffered since they became the Los Angeles Dodgers.
I read that not like 30 minutes ago. I came across that. Yeah. Like, that's pretty funny.
Since they were in Brooklyn. Last time it was in the 1940s. I don't remember the exact year.
I saw it was a 16-game skid in 44 for Dem Bums.
There you go. So, you know, I mean, it just hasn't happened. And, oh, by the way, as long as we're keeping up on stats like that, no team has won the World Series with a 10-game or long losing streak in their season either. What they're doing is historic for all the wrong reasons. I mean, we're talking about 16 out of 17. The Indians are now just 4 games behind the Dodgers for Major League Baseball's best record. And in a potential World Series matchup with the National League champion, no matter who it might be, they would have games 1 and, if need be, game 7 in their building. Because they did away, as we know, with the All-Star game deciding the
finally
home team advantage, home field advantage in the World
Series. Well, it took 110 years.
No kidding. So if the Indians continue on, and look, let's be real. They're not going to, as you heard, I don't know if it was Olney or Krasnick in that clip.
Krasnick.
Krasnick said, you know, you're not going to win all of the remaining games, clearly. Right now they shouldn't have already done this. They should have lost a long time ago, quite frankly, and then maybe started another one. Or maybe they lose 2 out of 3 and then go on a run of 6 out of 7, you know, if they are as good as they appear to be. That at least would impart normalcy on the situation. But what they are doing is abnormal. It's not possible, and yet here they are continuing to do it. And to be honest with you, I see them winning at least the next two. I see them winning tonight against the Tigers very, very handily with Corey Kluber, the now, I would have to say, prohibitive favorite over. Remember, it was only 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, where we talked about, does Kluber have a shot at Chris Sale for the Cy Young? And we thought, well, yeah, it's an outside shot, but the chances are it finishes second. Chris Sale is being called potentially the Cy Young winner and the MVP for the Red Sox, if we recall those conversations.
Mm-hmm.
And quite frankly, now Corey Kluber, I think, has passed Chris Sale.
And I think part of what that was, too, was the first game of this Indians win streak was battering Chris Sale for the second straight time this year. That was day one of this streak was against Sale.
Yeah, that's a very good point. And Corey Kluber's stats, quite frankly, are better than Chris Sale's in virtually every category, with the exception, perhaps, of total strikeouts. Well, and obviously wins, but you take those things into consideration with the fact that, or into context with the fact that Corey Kluber missed a month. So he missed probably in a month's time, five starts every 5 days, maybe six starts in a 30-day period. And he missed six starts worth of strikeouts as well. So if you look at them just, you know, per innings pitched, et cetera, honestly, there has been nobody better in the American League than Corey Kluber. So he very well may be, and he'll go tonight. He'll get another win. He'll get his 16th win tonight against the Tigers. And I know you got to play the game, and I know it, blah, blah, blah. But I'm just looking at the way things are, and I'm looking at the way he has pitched. I'm looking at the way this team approaches the game. And they're going to win tonight. They're going to win tomorrow with Mike Clevenger, who has been all but untouchable. He has not given up a run in three straight appearances.
That's amazing, too.
None of them have been complete games, we should point out, averaging six innings a start.
Right.
But that's 18. I want to say it's 19 innings total in a row that he has not given up a run.
Yeah, because he's gone three straight starts without giving up a run. He's gone at least six innings in each. And I read the other day that's the first Indian since like 1980 something to do that. So not Kluber, not Carrasco, not somebody else. Clevenger.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. How about that? I mean,
these are the abnormal things you were referring to, Bob, right, a few minutes ago.
Right. And then, you know, how do we not talk about Bauer, who of course won two nights ago on the nationally televised game on Sunday night, and his ERA since, I want to say, is either the 1st of July or at some point in early July, I don't have all the stats in front of me, but I do remember, his ERA in that span is better than Kluber's.
Yep.
He is at an ERA of 2.19 since that period of time, like I said, in early July. And, you know, just to let you know how badly he started off the season, despite this tremendous winning streak that he's on, and despite this incredible performance of outings that he has put up, and leading this team in victories, by the way, in case you're scoring that at home, despite all of that, his ERA is still just a shade under 4.5.
But that's down about almost a run and a half from its peak.
More than that. I mean, I think it's down a full 2 runs. He was up at around 6.5 or something like that. He's just at about 4.5 now, I believe. I don't have that memorized.
4.33 is where he's at the moment.
4.33. Okay. Well, yeah. So, like I said, a little bit less than 4.5. So I'll let you know how high he was. In fact, just for blanks and giggles here, let me just pull up his monthlies and tell you exactly where he was. Trevor Bauer in where's my game log? Hold on a second here. I'm gonna pull it here. Here it is. Okay. In the month of April, Trevor Bauer was 2-2 with an ERA of 6.26. In the month of May, he was 3-2 with an ERA of 5.82. In the month of June, very solid month, 2-2 with a 3.82. This is just in that month, not cumulatively to that point. In the month of July, he was 2-2 with an ERA of 5.30. In the month of August, in 7 starts, he was 5-0 with an ERA of 2.31. And thus far in September, he's 2-0 with a 2.84. Overall, then, he is 16-8 with a 4.33. So it really wasn't July. It was the spectacular performances from Trevor Bauer kind of started at the end of July and all the way through August. Here's the game by game, just to kind of underscore the point for Bauer, who has, like I said, at least for about a month and a half, actually been better than Kluber, statistically speaking. Bauer started this tremendous run with a win that evened his record at 8-8 on July 21st. They beat the Blue Jays. He went 5 innings, 6 hits, 3 runs allowed, struck out 6, got the win. The next start against the Angels on the 27th, 8 innings, 1 run, 7 hits, struck out 6, walked just 1. That's where it really started. Then against the Yankees, 7 innings, 1 run, 7 strikeouts, 2 walks, got the win. Against Colorado in a losing effort, 3-2 they lost, but 7 innings, 1 run, 9 strikeouts, no walks. And the ERA just keeps falling and falling and falling and falling. At the point that he started this, by the way, it was 5.59 just to let you know when I started this little run and going through it. So now, after that loss to the Rockies, it was 4.79. Then he beat the Red Sox, 6 2/3, 3 runs, 11 strikeouts, just 2 walks. You see his command and control. The strikeout-to-walk ratio has just been dynamic for him in this tremendous run. He then lost to the Twins, and I believe that's it. Did he get hurt then, Jim? Because he only
That was a doubleheader. He came on in relief at the game of a doubleheader.
And took the loss. Yeah, he took the loss, unfortunately.
No, he did not take the loss. The Indians already
lost. Yeah. They lost. My apologies. They lost 4-2 that game. Okay. But he worked 2/3 of an inning in relief. That's right. Thank you for that reminder. So that was kind of irrelevant. To Kansas City then, 6 1/3. 0 runs allowed. Struck out 4, walked 2 in a 5-0 win. Boston, 5 1/3. Not his best start in this run. 4 runs allowed. 8 strikeouts. 3 walks. Got his 13th win. ERA down to 4.59 at that time. Yankees in a 2-1 win. Pitcher's duel, 6 innings. 1 run. Struck out 4. Walked 4. Against the White Sox on the 4th of September, 6 1/3. 2 runs. 9 strikeouts. 1 walk. And then, of course, what we just saw Sunday night. 6 1/3. 2 runs. 7 strikeouts. No walks. ERA down now. From, like I said, a high point. Well, let's not start in April when he was at 6.26. Let's go to where he was. His high water mark in terms of ERA was May 8th when he had a 7.36. As of May 30th, it was still 6 even. Then he went through June, and some of the numbers that I gave you, he was 3-1 in that month. Then July, which again, it just continued to drop steadily. And then, of course, August, which was just dynamic. Anyway, point being, Dennis Manilov said something yesterday, Jim, that I found very, very interesting. He said, I don't care how long this streak runs, and I don't care if people think they're peaking too soon. He said in the postseason, the thing that gives him confidence and gives them an advantage over everybody else, and that includes the Astros, and it includes the Red Sox, and anybody else who might wild card their way into something in the American League. And the three things he said are, well, what we just saw. Carrasco, tonight Kluber, not in that order. Of course, in the postseason, it will be Kluber, Carrasco, but then Bauer, and which we saw Sunday. So that threesome in a row. And if they did need to go to a fourth, Mike Clevinger, as we talked about, is untouchable, at least in his last three starts as well. That rotation, combined with the best bullpen in baseball that still doesn't have arguably the best reliever in baseball going for it, talking about Andrew Miller, that is what gives them an advantage that even once this magical mystery tour of a winning streak is over, is going to have it's going to give them, you know, the opportunity to win in the postseason and to, and take this to a second straight World Series.
Yeah, because as we know, it comes down to those kind of things. You know, in playoff games, you get certain starters matched up and then filter into bullpens. How many teams, especially in the last 10 years, have taken, most recently it was referred to as the Royals approach. Somehow starters just get me 5 innings and let my shutdown bullpen. Yeah. The Indians don't even have to hope with, you know, hands clenched praying the way the Royals of their rotation did in 14 and 50 because they have a vastly superior rotation. But, you know, these are some of the abnormal things about winning, you know, this many games in a row. It just doesn't happen that often in baseball, no matter what era it is, 2017, dead ball era, mid-50s, that doesn't matter.
No.
You just don't win
games.
It's
just not supposed to be like this. I mean, there's something special. And like I said, I really hope fans understand what they're watching. That this is something that if you are a real fan and you one day have children or grandchildren, you'll talk about the summer of 2017 when you watch the Indians do something magical. And especially if they go on to win the World Series, Jim. I mean, my God, first world championship since 1948 and the whole nine yards. If they go on and do that, this streak will take on even more,
yep,
you know, epic proportions. That's not the right word, but it'll be even bigger in the grand scheme,
yeah,
of things.
No, you're right.
It leads to that. So I just hope people understand it and really kind of soak this in.
You know, a good point on that, because there's the other win streaks that they're still ahead of them, the tying the 20 for the American League record that could happen tonight. Well, that A's team lost in the first round. 21 from the 1935 Cubs. They lost to, I believe, the Tigers in the World Series that year. And then the one that included a tie, the 1916 Giants at 26, they didn't win the World Series that particular year either. And then, to me, you know where some of the abnormal things that happened in this streak get summed up to me? And you can attest to this. 1 month ago, what was I saying related to the Indians? I was ignoring Houston, and it was all about chase down Boston so you can at least get that, the home field in that particular series. It never entered my mind really until maybe about 2 weeks ago at the longest that there was actually a chance because they were so far behind them to overtake Houston. But then when you win 19 in a row, things like that happen. And now I believe they're 1.5 up in the standings on Houston, which actually translates to 2.5 because a tie would go to the Indians.
That's exactly right.
That's crazy. I never would have thought that was in any way, shape, or form possible just 3 weeks to a month ago. And you know that because I said that on this very show. It shouldn't have been.
Yeah, because this just should not be happening. I mean, you're exactly right. And Jim, speaking of streaks, let's get a wild stat of the day.
ESPN 106.5 The Ticket presents The Wild Stat of the Day, brought to you by Buffalo Wild Wings. Wings, beer, sports.
Yeah, Buffalo Wild Wings Wild Stat of the Day today. While the Indians are on this amazing run, the Dodgers are in their big-time funk. We gave a couple of numbers about what they've done, and here's a different one. They've lost 11 straight as of now. That's 1-16 in their last 17, dating back to late August. But here's the interesting wild stat of the day. The skid now makes the Dodgers the only team in Major League Baseball history to sport both a 15-1 stretch and a 1-15 stretch in the same baseball season. It just doesn't make any sense. Not only is that a wild stat, that's just an impossible stat, but there you have it. Your Buffalo Wild Wings wild stat of the day. All right, we got a lot of football to talk about today, too. As a matter of fact, the first week of the season is now finally complete after a couple of games last night. If you were watching last night, you were probably doing it not because you happened to be maybe a Chargers or a Vikings fan, but maybe because you had FanDuel on your mind and you had some fantasy studs in that game. Well, if you were looking for Adrian Peterson to be one of them, yeah, not so much. Major, major disappointment for him and for the Chiefs. But there were some fantasy studs that you probably checked as you checked your FanDuel scorecard, including Antonio Brown of the Steelers, 11 catches for 182. I told you to play him last week. Also, somebody I didn't tell you to play, but I'm not going to make that mistake again, former Toledo Rocket Kareem Hunt, who put up 246 with 3 touchdowns in his NFL debut. That's the beauty of FanDuel, predicting who the studs will be, putting them on your roster, and winning cash. If you think you can do it, you got to get on FanDuel. Register now at FanDuel.com. Every week is fantasy football for everyday fans at FanDuel. New contests start each week, which means no busted seasons. You can pick your new players every time through. And guess what? Contests start at just $1. So if you're a newbie, you got nothing to worry about. If you're an expert and you know how to do this stuff, you can win some big bucks. Just pick a contest, choose your team, and watch your score in real time. Over 2.5 million players have won cash prizes playing fantasy sports on FanDuel. Register now at FanDuel.com using my code France, FRANTZ. If you're a new user, you get a free entry into the NFL Sunday Million. That's over $1 million in cash prizes available when you make your first deposit on FanDuel. Just visit FanDuel.com. Use the promo code France. That's FanDuel.com, promo code FRANTZ, void where prohibited. More baseball talk coming up with Matt Lodi, joining us from Cleveland in just a couple of minutes. Then we're going to talk with Ashley McLennan, talking to us from the Detroit side of things. Obviously, it's rebuild time. How long will it take? And how bad is tonight going to be with Kluber going up against this rebuilding Tigers team? We'll talk to Ashley McLennan of BlessYouBoys.com. That's a Tigers site at SB Nation. So all of that's still coming up right here on The Ticket.
Now back to the Bob France Extravaganza, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Indeed, rolling onward are we, 3:37. We are not rolling nearly as well as the Cleveland Indians are, though. We're going to continue talking about it after I remind you where you should be right now if you are interested in happy hour. You know where that is? It's Don Juan Mexican Bar and Grill in the brand new location at the Franklin Park Mall. Absolutely brand new inside. The bar, the booths, the tables, chairs, everything just adds to the great atmosphere with an authentic Mexican feel and, yes, an authentic Mexican taste as well. By the way, since it's Tuesday, In addition to a happy hour, Taco Tuesday means every taco is just a dollar, and happy hour goes on every single day from 3 to 6. That's right, right now, 7 days a week, you can get out there at Don Juan's and enjoy tremendous, insane drink specials. Do not forget the original location in Maumee on Dussel Drive. They'll take great care of you there. But the brand-new location is at Franklin Park on the Monroe Street side of the mall between JCPenney and Dillard's. You cannot get in it through the food court. You got to go from the outside. It's directly across from Nick and Jimmy's. It's Don Juan Mexican Bar and Grill now at the Franklin Park Mall. And how about, hey, 19, the Cleveland Indians continuing to roll through the second half of this baseball season, putting up numbers that, quite frankly, don't seem fair. They have outscored their opponents by plus 100. I don't know the exact number, but over 100 runs in run differential in 19 games. But just to give you one that I do have directly, they have allowed, in these 19 games, a total of 32 runs. They have hit, in these 19 games, a total of 38 home runs. 38 home runs to 32 runs allowed. That is how you build a 19-game winning streak. And joining us now to talk about it from NEOinsiders.com and the AP radio side in Cleveland is Mr. Matt Lodi. Hey, Matt, how are you, brother?
Hey, Bob. Good afternoon. How you doing?
Man, I don't know. I'm trying to make sense of all of this. You know, Jim and I talked about this in the first half hour about how this kind of thing in 2017 really shouldn't be happening. Nobody should be clicking on every cylinder. Starting pitching, relief pitching, top of the lineup, middle of the order, bottom of the lineup. I mean, everybody is doing it all exactly right all the time. And I just don't know that I've ever seen anything quite like it, Matt.
Well, I mean, I know I haven't, and you know, and I are pretty much close to the same age. Yeah. I think you go back to those great teams that we've seen. You know, the team that kind of comes to mind a little bit, Bob, but it wasn't over the course of this type of stretch, might be the 84 Tigers. You know, the Jack Morris, you know, Alan Trammell, Lou Whitaker team, Kirk Gibson. They kind of dominated, though, from start to finish.
Didn't they start 35-5 that year?
Yeah, they came, but you know, then they kind of cooled off, and of course they ended up winning the World Series over San Diego, but still, that team really was good from the beginning to the end. I don't remember them going into a long, you know, lull, but of course that was before social media and before, you know, people tweeting at me in the middle of the season this year that, oh, this team isn't even going to make the playoffs, and, you know, those 10 games with Kansas City is going to be their undoing and all this other stuff. And now it's like we look back on 4 weeks ago, and it's a laugher. It's been a laugher. And I don't know if there's really an explanation. And the one thing that I'll say, and I spent a lot of time talking to Yan Gomes about it yesterday, is that this team is taking this such in stride. It's almost as if, like, they kept telling us all, you know, during their struggles in the early and even in the middle of the year, we're going to get there, we're going to get there. But I don't think they could possibly have imagined that they would go on a run like this. Maybe they thought they'd win 15 of 20 or 20 of 29 or something like that. But I don't think anybody could possibly think that they would ever win 19 in a row. And I hate to start putting the jinx, but my gosh, when you got Kluber tonight, you almost have to think that you're going to get to 20 after this one tonight. I mean, but still, you certainly in the game of baseball, we've obviously seen you just don't want to count on anything, but they've given themselves a great opportunity tonight to get to 20, no doubt.
Yeah, you know what I love, Matt, as we again kind of wait for the other shoe to drop. I mean, you know, you can't win them all, even though it seems like you can win them all. You should win the next two. You should get tonight with Corey Kluber on the mound. And quite frankly, no disrespect to our friends at the Tigers, of course, and we're sitting here in Toledo, Ohio, home of the Mud Hens, the AAA affiliate. No disrespect, but it is what it is. They know where they are. They know what the rebuild entails and how they're just getting started with all of that, with all of the trades and Justin Verlander moving on, et cetera. So they ought to win tomorrow with Mike Clevinger, too. So it ought to get to 21. But what I love the most is that Terry Francona will have none of it. And he says everything right. And not just the right words, but in the right tone. I cannot say enough about how impressed I am with listening to him answer questions before games and after games. He's not talking about streaks. He's not talking about numbers. He's not talking about run differential. He's not talking about history. He's saying, well, we have to come out tomorrow and get ready to play baseball and play better than they do tonight. This game. That's it. You know, it's an old cliche in sports to say one game at a time. You only focus on the game in front of you. You don't look ahead. It is a cliche. Every manager and every coach ever, anywhere in every sport says that. But damn it, when I listen to Terry Francona say it in the middle of a 19-game winning streak, I believe it.
Yeah, and the one thing about it, Bob, I think it shows you how more I mean, if there's one thing we've learned about Terry in his time in Cleveland, it's how to be a manager. And I don't want to disrespect guys like Manny Acta or Eric Wedge or certainly way back in the day of Mike Hargrove, but boy, Terry takes everything in stride so well. And maybe behind the scenes, he's just as Will Ferrell said in Kicking and Screaming, a tornado of anger, and he's kicking the wall and everything. But when he gets in front of us, it is a whole different guy. He just sits there and he's calm, cool, and collective. And I'll take you back to last night. You know, Tom Withers, who of course is the great AP writer here in Cleveland while I do the radio side, opened up our time with Terry after the win, and he said, look, Terry, I know you don't want to talk about the streak, but, and you could just see Terry wince, like, oh, here we go again. And, you know, he said, look, I don't want to disrespect what we're doing. I don't want to disrespect the team across the hall or anything like that, or down the hall, I guess, in the Tigers, but, you know, we just look at it one day at a time. And, you know, the thing is, it's almost, we laughed about it last night, a couple reporters and I, it's almost like Groundhog Day, because every day this streak goes, it's getting harder and harder almost in a weird way to get much out of these guys. You know, if you go into that locker room, it's almost like spring training. Like, you know, well, we're going to be a good team this year and we're going to try to play well and avoid injuries. The same cliches could be used almost all, every single game. I mean, they get a lead early, except for one day, which was Saturday when they were down 1-0 and then eventually took the lead and won the game against Baltimore. They get a lead early. The pitching is always great. The defense is good. The hitting ends up coming through in the clutch with a big hit like yesterday with Lindor's 3-run triple early to kind of put this thing away. And it's almost like, what else can we say about it? You know, I mean, in a weird way, what else can you write about it? It's just every single day I see national guys like Bob Nightingale and, you know, guys like that putting out more and more numbers of just how incredible this streak is. And, you know, Zach Meisel, who now is over at The Athletic, brought up a good point last night before Terry came into the room. He kind of laughed. He said, what's it going to be like next year if the Indians win like 11 in a row and it's just like no big deal, you know, because of this streak this year, which again, you know, knock on wood, you know, should, you know, possibly reach 20 if they get this thing tonight with Kluber on the mound. It's I don't think anybody could have saw this coming. And the way that they're handling it is the way that a team that has been there, done that in terms of long winning streaks, which they had last year. And of course, a team that was, you know, a couple of moments possibly away from winning a title last year is handling it.
We're talking to Matt Lodi, NEOSportsInsiders.com, also the AP radio side out of Cleveland, trying to make some sense of this winning streak. What do you make, you mentioned Zach Meisel a moment ago, I got him on the brain. What do you make, Matt Lodi, of the simultaneous Indians run and the Dodgers collapse from 91 and 36 to losing 16 out of 17 and 11 in a row? The Indians are suddenly just four games behind the Dodgers for the best record in all of baseball, something that I can see very easily happening in the next 2 weeks, them making up those four games, if not sooner. What do you make of the incredible historic streaks going on in two different directions? In fact, we just had our wild stat of the day before you came on, Matt. Even the Dodgers, forget about the Indians part of this, they've had their own two different kinds of streaks. First team in baseball history to have a 1-15 run and a 15-1 run in the same season. So they've set their own kind of crazy records. Go ahead.
Yeah, I know, Bob, and I think it just goes to show you that, and it's something that I've kind of preached again on Twitter most of the year when fans are screaming and yelling in the course of a 9-inning game when the Indians might be losing 5-1, or you know maybe they lose a July 4th game in front of a sold out crowd to the Padres when they can't score a run. It's that you can't get too ahead of yourself in this game. It just, you cannot let Monday seep into Tuesday, just like you can't leave Tuesday seep into Wednesday. But on the other hand, you know, it is a long, long season. And I mean, again, as we keep talking about, I mean, 3 weeks ago, or I should say, let's go back to 3 months ago, it was the Houston Astros were basically the World Series champions. I saw something out of Vegas like 3-4 months ago where it said, who's going to win the American League, the Astros or the, quote, rest of the field, meaning anybody else? And now the Astros aren't even the best team in the American League record-wise. And then, of course, the Dodgers got hot. And then it was, well, the Dodgers are the World Series champions. And, you know, again, it just goes to show you it's a microwave society that we live in where everybody wants to crown a champion today, and you just have to let this thing play out. You know, in terms of the historical perspective, it is really bizarre to me that a team – as good as the Dodgers have been, have gone into the tank so quickly. But there is one thing that I can point to a little bit. Again, I'm not throwing stones. They're still a very good team, and somebody's going to have to knock them off. I still think they're the best team in the NL, and that is they do have some young players on that team, and some of these young players who haven't been there, done that, like we talked about a moment ago, are struggling. And, you know, guys like Bellinger and company, they just haven't hit the ball quite as well. And their starting pitching has struggled. Let's just face it. I mean, if there's one thing about this streak, I think the most impressive part of the Indian streak has been the pitching, just because we've been waiting all year for this starting five, and, you know, even throw in six if you want to put Salazar in there, even though he's out of the pen right now, have stepped up. The Dodgers pitching has really gone the other way. And I think that that's just a sign where, once again, it's a long season. And, you know, sometimes teams are going to go through these slumps. I never thought the Dodgers would have a prolonged slump like they have had. But they certainly have showed right now that they're vulnerable. And like you said, I do agree with you. I think the Indians are going to catch them, because the way that they're playing right now, the schedule that lays out the rest of the season, I think the Indians might find themselves, you know, you and I had this big discussion last year why the Indians had home field in the World Series. Let's face it, if they do what they're supposed to do, they may get home field in the World Series this year, and it might just be because they earned it this time.
That's exactly right. That's what we were talking about last half hour, too, and I think that that is going to be the case. Of course, they got to get to the World Series. So, I mean, to have that advantage,
right, of course.
To have that advantage in the playoffs certainly helps as well. Matt, this is a real tough one now. I mean, you look at Jose Ramirez. He is just leading the league in extra base hits. He has kind of become, ironically, a team that has the money that they pay Edwin Encarnacion. The all-star that is, you know, Francisco Lindor, you know, the money they're paying Jay Bruce, even on a short-term rental, if he's here long-term or not, we don't know yet. But in other words, there's a lot of stars on this team. I don't know that anybody would have predicted coming into the year that Jose Ramirez would be perhaps the best hitter that they have. Corey Kluber, who I think has overtaken Chris Sale and now should be the leader in the clubhouse he's not in the clubhouse yet.
Cy Young,
on the
yeah.
course, but he should be the leader in the Cy Young balloting. There's a lot of ways to go with this, but if I were to ask you right now who the Indians' MVP for 2017 is, who would you say?
Well, the reason I'll go with Ramirez is pretty simple. Number one is I think I saw somebody last night on the national level say that he thought it was between, you know, Ramirez and Altuve for the American League MVP, and I think those are two very, very worthy choices. But the reason why I'll give it to Jose is just because he's an everyday position player. And you know, while Kluber has been just Kluber-esque and he's been dominant and everything like that, you know, let's go back to 2 years ago, Bob. Could you ever have imagined the words Jose Ramirez and MVP in the same sentence? I mean, this guy was an afterthought in Columbus, and it really wasn't until, you know, injuries kind of forced the Indians' hand, all right, let's give this guy yet another shot, because he really hadn't proved it at all at the major league level. He is truly a Rocky story, if you will, you know, kind of coming out of nowhere, you know, beating up everybody, and then all of a sudden now all the season talk for the MVP award. And he's just a delight as far as the fans are concerned. And he really is. He's a good guy. I mean, he treats everybody well. But as far as, like, you know, the MVP goes, on this baseball team, I've got to go with Ramirez. You know, Lindor's got to be in the mix.
Yeah,
nobody could have saw the power numbers out of him. And the same with Kluber. But again, I think Ramirez is an everyday player, as consistent as he's been, working through injuries like last night with the forearm contusion. I think he's the guy right now.
Yeah, Lindor has to be in that mix, too. I heard an interview with him earlier in which he was asked, how in the world are you generating as much power and as many hard-hit balls as you are this year compared to, you know, a record last year in terms of home runs? He's already got 29 home runs, and I want to say 36 doubles from a skinny little shortstop. And you know, it's funny how you said earlier on, you know, you're getting the same pat cliche answers that you always get from preseason or spring training. You're getting them now, and he said, well, I'm just picking out good pitches to hit. And when I get a good pitch to hit,
right,
I know what's coming. I'm able to, you know, to swing harder at it, and which is, you know, pretty simplistic answer. But he really has become something nobody ever expected. Remember, he was supposed to be all glove. Anything you get with the bat is a little bit of a bonus, a little bit of gravy. Not only did he become a great hitter, or a really good hitter last year, he's become a great hitter, a power hitter, a run-producing hitter this year.
Yeah, and the funny part about that is, once again, I'll go back to earlier in the year when this team was struggling, and, you know, obviously Lindor started out red hot, and then he went in the tank a little bit. If you remember, like, his average dropped, I want to say, down into the 240s, maybe even down into the 230s for a few days, but he was having struggles, and a lot of people started saying, well, this guy's trying to hit too many home runs. He's trying to hit home runs every time he comes up to the plate. Now all of a sudden they're like, oh yeah, he's great. You know what I mean? It just goes back to the, you know, again, as I mentioned earlier, our microwave society of people jumping on and off this bandwagon a little bit, but I think the power thing, you know, kind of he developed that in the offseason. You could tell he put on a little bit of weight, and not just, you know, weight like me and you eating donuts. I'm talking weight like in the weight room.
He's thicker. You can definitely see it, yeah.
Yeah, you could see it. Oh, there's no doubt. You could see it, and you just get a sense from him. that, you know, he's more patient at the plate too. I know that that's hard to believe because he had such a good year last year, but he looks to me like a guy, like I mentioned, like he mentioned, really, he's picking out good pitches. He really is. He will wait on his pitch. And I'll go back to the game Sunday night. You know, he had that kind of long at bat. What was that? Maybe the sixth inning or seventh inning or whatever it was. And then he got his pitch, Bob. He didn't miss. And he put it, I think, about 400 feet, you know, and that was the pitch that ended up giving them the 3-1 lead. And they wound up winning, obviously, 3-2. So they really needed that home run in that situation. And again, I go back to the fact that, you know, he's been very disciplined. You know, he loves the game. He kind of, you know, he's kind of like a latter-day Omar Vizquel, the smile, the infectious personality in that locker room and everything. But at the same time, you know, he's obviously gotten better in one season. I don't know how much better he can get in the field, but certainly at the plate, you know, he's a better Omar Vizquel as far as hitting. I mean, I know Omar had that one year when everybody was hitting home runs where I think he hit like 13 or 18 or somewhere around in that range. But nobody could have ever thought that, you know, Francisco Lindor was going to hit 30 home runs. And I'd be very surprised if he doesn't reach that mark for some reason other than injury. He's just, you know, again, he's just kind of come on. And as I go back to say, I mean, I think the hard work and the dedication at the plate has really paid off. And, you know, give some credit to the Indians. They really wanted to coach this guy up enough to the point where, you know, hey, they'd love to see a guy who could hit 300. I don't think they ever thought they'd get a guy who'd hit 30 home runs at the shortstop position or out of him. But they'd love a guy who could hit 300 and drive in, you know, 50, 60 runs. And here he's just, you know, he's just added on another dimension to his game.
I don't think it's fair to do this to them or to even ask you, but I'm going to do it anyway because what the heck, we're just doing sports talk radio. When does the streak end? You got two more against the Tigers today and tomorrow.
Yeah.
Then you got four with Kansas City, who has just free fallen out of this thing, and is you know, September call up written, playing a bunch of young guys too. And quite frankly, we, you know, the Indians bludgeoned them just a couple of weeks ago. So, you know, how long does this thing ride? Is it one more? Well, I think we both would agree they're going to win the next two against the Tigers. They're both.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
You got four straight against Kansas City at home, then out to L.A. for three. Does it go to 23? Does it go to 25? Where does this thing end?
Well, you got to figure the West Coast, it's got to come to an end. I mean, there's no way. I mean, you can't possibly think that this team would go out on the West Coast and get, what, two sweeps, I believe it's out on the West Coast. The one pitcher,
Hold on, Matty. To get to 20, that's okay. They're at 19 now. To get to 25, it would just be these next two against Detroit and then the first three of four against KC. That would be 25.
Okay.
So you wouldn't have to win a game on the West Coast to get there. I guess my question is do you think they can, you know, finish out an undefeated homestand?
I mean, I think they can. I mean, I think if there's I don't want to say weak link because this guy's pitched pretty well, but if there's one guy in the rotation that you can kind of point to as a little shaky is Josh Tomlin. And I believe he would pitch what, on Friday?
He pitched
Saturday, so I think he would pitch on Thursday. Okay,
yeah,
there
against,
you go. So,
against Eunice or whatever he is.
Yeah, I mean, but again, the way the Indians are hitting the baseball, I mean, there's, at any given day, they can give him five or six runs to play with. You just don't. You hope you have one of those Josh Tomlin days when he gives up three home runs, and you know, as Terry Francona has always said about Josh Tomlin, he's going to give up home runs. What you hope is that he doesn't give up home runs with guys on base.
Exactly.
You know, they'll live with the solo home run. They just don't want to live with a home run of a guy who, you know, he's got two guys on and one out or something of that nature. So, I mean, if there's a game that they're going to lose, it might be Thursday. You know, Clevenger is another guy just because he's so young and. You wonder if the pressure of pitching tomorrow in a noon game is going to get to him against Buck Farmer. I don't think so because this guy has really stayed pretty cool under pressure. And, of course, if there's a question mark, and I hate to say it's a question mark because, again, another guy who's pitched very, very well is Bauer, you know, because Trevor comes out once in a while and gives you one of those games. But he's just been so darn consistent. I mean, look at Sunday night. I mean, he needed every pitch he could get to get out of some situations. And, you know, so – I guess if I had a bet, which I don't usually do, I'd go on Thursday just because of Tomlin. But you never know, Bob. I mean, could they make it out of this weekend with the streak intact? Absolutely. Just the way they're playing. And boy, as I mentioned at the start of our interview, the situation with Kansas City, you look at a situation where a couple weeks ago they thought, oh yeah, this is the Indians' biggest threat. And now they're just an afterthought and it's going to be obviously the Twins. It looks like anyway, the Twins and the Yankees in that wild card. And right now, it looks like the Indians are going to play one of those two teams in the divisional round.
Last thing, Matt, we'll let you run. Matt Lodi is our guest. He is does a tremendous job with NEO Sports Insiders, founder of that website, neosportsinsiders.com, also with the AP in Cleveland. are the fans there getting this out there in Cleveland?
Oh, yeah.
And well, I ask that as I look at the attendance. In the last two right. games, wins 18 and 19 in this streak. Now, I want to make that clear. In fact, I'll go back a little bit to the start of the Baltimore series when they returned home. They were on, at the time they came back, would have been a 15-game winning streak when they came back home. How many is the ballpark hold out there?
I think at the most you could squeeze is 36, 35, 36, somewhere around 000. There.
Okay.
Yeah.
You're 6,000 shy of a sellout on a 15-game winning streak returning from a, what was it, 12-game road trip?
11.
12-game road trip, yeah.
11 games away from your own yard. You're on a 15-game winning streak, and you come back to a less than full house, 30,000, on a Friday freaking night in September. Then
well,
on Saturday, another 30,000 against the Orioles. And then yesterday and, Sunday and Monday.
Sunday night.
You don't combine the two attendances and fill the park. It's 21,200 on Sunday, again, a weekend. And then last night, 18,500. That's by my count. That's
yeah.
That's 39. I guess you could fill it with that, but it took two nights to. I mean, how is the biggest and best story in all of baseball being ho-hummed by the home crowd?
Well, I'll give you these reasons, and I never like to sit here and say why fans aren't coming to the ballpark, but I'll say this: Friday night high school football, Saturday was a 1 o'clock game. You know, which I those just generally don't draw as well. Sunday you had the Browns opener here, you know, which drew obviously 65 or whatever it might have been. And then last night, it's a Monday night. Kids are back at school. I mean, I'm not making excuses. I'm just giving you reasons as to possibly why. I feel there's a vibe down here, though, and just, you know, being here the last couple, I just feel there's a vibe that it's almost like playoff atmospheres while these guys are playing. Certainly Sunday night felt like it. I'll say that much, even though it wasn't full. Sunday night certainly felt like it, but you know, again, I never like to tell the fans how to spend their money. If maybe, you know what, Bob, here's another option. Maybe they're saving up for postseason. I don't know. I mean, I know that sounds weird because, you know, people maybe are not thinking that far ahead, but maybe some are and saying, hey, I don't care about a game against the Orioles. I care about a game against the Yankees or the Astros.
You know, the chances of getting tickets for those games are extremely difficult. And these
right.
games are the most fun you're probably ever going to have in your life watching a team with this record winning.
Sure.
Team. And
oh, yeah.
I will call people out for it because, quite frankly, remember where they are, okay? Out there in Cleveland, it's not Chicago, Los Angeles, or New York. You don't in Boston.
Right.
You can't spend $250 million on a payroll. Every time the Indians suck, the fans say, you know, in those little, you know, well, put a decent team on the field, I'd go.
You can't
expect me to go and pay those prices for this crappy team. Well, when the team is good, and not just good, great, and not just great, the best team in baseball. This is when the Indians should be stockpiling money from those turnstiles because
right.
they don't have the big city TV contracts generating revenue all the time. They make their revenue on ticket sales at the gate. And this is when it's supposed to be the going is, you know, you get it while the getting's good. And then that's supposed to sustain you when, you know, I can't afford to pay Frankie. I can't afford to pay all of these guys at the same team. The inevitable departure due to free agency, whatever time that is. So, Matt, you know, this is when the going is good. And for the fans to not follow through with what they always said, put a good team on the field and I'll go, to not have one of the best attendances in baseball for at least the last month. I mean, what are
yeah.
they since August 1st, for crying out loud? Forget about the 19-game streak. Aren't they like 31-4?
Incredible, yeah.
Or something stupid?
Incredible, sure.
Yeah, it's inexcusable to not have the top grossing because the tickets sell costs, but
attendance-wise,
attendance in the league or in baseball in the last month. There's no excuse for this.
No, and I think you'll see a spike this weekend with Kansas City just because – you know, number one, people are way more into the streak even more than they were when they came home a week ago, number one. And number two, you've got a situation where, you know, it's a Friday night, it's a Saturday night, and then it's a Sunday afternoon, and the Browns, even though they'll be playing, they're not here. So I think that will help this team. And again, I'm not giving the fans a pass per se. I'm just telling you, again, why I can surmise some reasons as to why maybe people weren't here even more so over the weekend. But I think you'll see it continually get better. And you know, what would be nice, obviously, and I'm sure Indians fans would hope for this, is that they win this thing, at least the American League Central, here. And I know that that's kind of a stretch because more than likely they're probably going to win it on this next road trip. At least it looks like that if they keep winning and other teams in the division keep losing.
Right? Yeah, it's only six.
Yeah, I mean, it's probably going to happen out on the coast. Yeah, which is, you know, yeah, which we, you know, for, you know, last year at least it happened in Detroit and it had a great fan base. I was there that night in Detroit when they won it at Comerica, and a lot of Indians fans made the trip just for that night. I mean, but if you go win it in L.A. or wherever they go, you know, and out on the coast, it's going to be very sporadic. So,
Indians are,
you know,
24th.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. I don't blame you, but I think it's just...
It's just to throw it out there, man.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean,
they trail the Twins, who are 21st.
Yeah.
They trail the Royals, who they lead by like 20 games, who are 17th.
Yeah.
They trail the Tigers, who they lead by 30 games. I mean, honestly, who are 16th
in
baseball. It's
tough, yeah. You may call out the fans. I don't know what else. You know, there's only so many free passes you can give. And this place, as you well know, as we saw last year, you know, when it counts the most in October, this place will be juiced like it always has been.
Yeah,
but
well,
you're right. You ask the Indians, I'm sure that they're going to tell you they're happy with where they're at attendance-wise just because it's a definite uptick from a year ago. But at the same time, there's no question they could be doing better.
Amen.
I think we know that. And, you know, the fact that I'm outside the gate right now and there's four people at the walk-up window tells you that, you know, they're just not getting the walk-ups.
Players,
I think that's a big
part.
The players
are giving them history. And they are,
yeah, they are.
They are not watching it, at least not in person anyway. They're night after night, they're creating history night after night, and the fans are yawning and saying, maybe I'll go another day. It's just impossible for me to understand. 21,000, 18,000 in a building that holds 36 to 37 for a team that's won 19 in a row now. How it's not sold out night after night, I just don't get it. Matt Lodi. Read him. Follow his website, neosportsinsiders.com. Matt, thanks for breaking it down for us. Enjoy the ride as long as it runs out there in Cleveland, my friend, and we'll talk again soon.
Thank you, Bob. We'll talk soon. Take care.
You got it. Hour number two of the Extravaganza coming right up.
Carlos Carrasco coming off a tremendous start. Swung on and missed. He struck him out. Number 200 on the year for Carrasco. Swing and a miss. He got him. Number 9 for Carrasco. In the second inning for the second time. Oh, he smokes this one in the gap. That'll get down and go to the wall. This will clear the bases. Diaz scores. Gomes scores. Look at Greg Allen flying home. Frankie's going for 3 and he is safe. And Ramirez jolts it deep right and gone. The man with more extra base hits than anybody in the league has just belted his 26th homer. 79 extra base hits on the year for Jose Ramirez, and it's now 7-0 Cleveland. Swings at the first pitch, pops it in the air, left field, shallow, Guyer racing in, makes the catch, and the Indians march on, 19 in a row.
Carrasco's performance, once again, he goes out there today, and it's also a shout out for him. He gave us a chance to win, and we did it. You know, we went out, put a lot of runs, and then the guys that came late in the game, they came in and did their job again. That's what we've been saying all along, that every time you put someone on the field, they do something. That's what we live for, you know, is trying to help the team win. And whenever you got someone on base and you drive him in, it makes you feel good about yourself because you helping the team that day. We pay attention because you guys bring it up. You know, we just enjoying the ride and just trying to focus on what we have in front of our feet.
I get it. I just don't feel like going there. I think it sends the wrong message. Our message is always consistent that, hey, show up and try to outplay them today. They're doing a really good job of that. I think to be a good team, spreading out games is important. And the guys have done a really good job of that. We haven't had to tax our bullpen. You know, we've been able to get a lot of guys in games, so everybody feels like, you know, they're part of what we're doing. It hit his bat first. I mean, he had actually a decent bruise on his forearm, but I think he was more just trying to get out of the way, and I think it kind of stunned him. But, yeah, he's fine.
Cleveland Indians, 19 consecutive victories. They go for the American League record later today with 20. That was set by the Oakland Athletics in 2002. And I got to tell you, I can't come up with another team that I can remember in the time since I started following baseball that was this dominant as the Indians are. I don't think this is a case of Terry Francona being a stick in the mud. I think he understands 17 years of managing how to handle these situations. And also, he's been on the other side of it with the baseball gods, right? 2011 with the Chicken and Beer Red Sox, the epic collapse in September. I'm sure he's not taking anything for granted.
Yeah, you know, if you're an Indians fan or an Indians person, there's two things you probably have to fret about. One is Andrew Miller's knee, and the other is please don't peak too early. You know, you can't maintain this pace. They almost have to hope that they get to this streak, and then maybe they lose three in a row or something. You're not going to win every single game the rest of the way out. There's a thing called regression, and at some point you wonder, you know, can you continue to play this well? But they just seem to be, you know, so sound.
This is the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Indeed, we roll along. It's 4:14. Thanks for being with us. Hour number two underway now on the Extravaganza. I want to remind you once again, you have until 6 o'clock to get out there and help. We are at the Walt Churchill's Market in Perrysburg, 26625 North Dixie Highway. The ticket is there right now, collecting items to help fill up that truck donated by Bolt Express to take hurricane relief supplies to Texas. Remember, there are still thousands and thousands of people without very basic necessities. And, of course, the cleanup effort down there is just massive. And so some of the things they're looking for, if you have them available and you can drop them off in Perrysburg, we'll be there until 6 o'clock filling that truck. Non-perishable food items, obviously, personal hygiene items, over-the-counter medications, especially for children. Those kinds of things are necessary. Waterproof Band-Aids, still so many flooded areas there. Diapers, pet food, let's not forget about the four-legged parts of the family, as well as, of course, cleanup items. Tarps, shovels, 55-gallon plastic bags, hand tools, gloves, blankets, all of those, flashlights and batteries, all very, very important. If you can pick up one or more of those items and drop them off at Walt Churchill's Market in Perrysburg, that would be outstanding. Thanks to our friends at Walt Churchill's, as well as Bolt Express, Impact with Hope, and you for helping us out as we try to bring relief to our fellow Americans down there in Texas from ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. All right, want to shift gears a little bit. While we still stay on baseball a bit here in this half hour, we're going to go to another side. We're going to go north of the state line as we talk about the best team in baseball, the red-hot Cleveland Indians, having won 19 in a row. Not quite so much for the Tigers. Detroit, just the latest team to get steamrolled by the Indians last night, and they did indeed get steamrolled. It was an 11-0 non-starter, really, from the very beginning, and it doesn't look to get a whole lot better with Corey Kluber going tonight. Tigers have lost 8 of their last 10. They are an astounding 27.5 games out of first place, just something you didn't expect to see when this season began, and a lot of folks picked the Tigers to maybe have the best chance to unseat the Indians and win the Central Division. But the rebuild is on. J.D. Martinez is gone. Obviously, now Justin Verlander is gone. And joining us to kind of pick up the pieces and maybe look toward the future a little bit is Ashley McClendon, who writes about the Tigers for BlessYouBoys.com, a part of SB Nation. Ashley, good to have you back on our program here in Toledo. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me back. How are you guys?
Well, we're good. I mean, you know, Jim Kushner and I are better than good because we're both Cleveland Indians fans.
Yeah, so, then I'd say you guys have been having a good 19 game run.
Well, more than that. I mean, really, I think so. They've had the best record in baseball, I want to say, since the beginning of August and maybe even back into July. It's something like 31-4 out of the last 35 or something stupid. But yeah, it is a lot of fun for us. Not as much for fans in Northwest Ohio and Southeast Michigan who might be listening to us for the Tigers. We knew this was going to happen once the sell-off started, and we knew that, you know, losing some key components of this team that were supposed to be there is going to be necessary to lose those guys in order to rebuild and restock. But it is painful. How are the fans that you interact with handling where they are right now?
Well, it's kind of a 50-50 split. You have the folks who understand that the rebuild was really the only path for the Tigers to go. And they understand that you have to sell pieces to get pieces in return. And there's no way the Tigers can build up their farm system or develop those players from inside the system without getting those players first. And you've got to give guys up for that. So I think there are people that realize that, yeah, it's going to be really tough for the rest of this season and probably for the next two seasons, but it's the necessary evil of a rebuild. And then you have the people who are going to take to Twitter, pulling out their hair, just going crazy because the Tigers are losing 8 of 10 games, whereas most of us looking at the lineup are going, okay, yeah, I'm glad we won two.
That's exactly right. When you look at, when you're realistic about it, to those who are understanding of it, it's still got to be hard. How you put yourself in that position then, for example, Ashley,
yeah.
How did you feel when you watched Justin put on that Astros cap for the first time and deal and look as good as he did for the Astros? It's got to be hard, even if you understand the need and you understand why you have to give up those guys in order to stock this thing for the future. It still has to hurt after seeing him in that old English decap for so many years.
Oh, absolutely. Like, I mean, there was two parts of me even when the trade deadline came around, and I was like, the writer part was kind of hoping for the trade because it gave us great fodder for a week to like really discuss every aspect of that and to look at what we got in return and to kind of go through a huge trade like that. But the part of me that's been a Tigers fan for so long really, really wanted to see Verlander stay in that old English D forever and never switch to another team. And then there's the part that has to be sympathetic to him as a person as well, and to realize that he had his own goals when he came in, and he had the things that he wanted to achieve as a player, and at 34, he's running out of time to do that. So it's really hard to hold anything against him for his decision to go to a team that's built to either win this year or even next year.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And you talk about how you'd like to see him wear that cap forever. In a way, it would almost be cruel to make him do that, you know, if they hadn't traded him.
Because
knowing what they have next year, you said it yourself a minute. Let's look at the lineup. Hey, we're lucky we won two out of those 10. That's going to be an entire season next year. It may be the next couple of seasons where that lineup and that roster is going to be young guys finding their way. Even if they're super talented prospects, that takes time. And, you know, Justin Verlander at age 34, 5, 6, you know, going into the next couple of years, could very well, you know, be dealing and put a pretty good line together and still take the loss time and time again because he's just not going to get the run support. I don't think it's right. Right, relatively speaking. You know what I mean? It wouldn't be fair to a guy of his caliber and of his, you know, career of greatness to make him pitch for a team that's on the rebuild as he is in the twilight of his career to be pitching with a bunch of guys who are on the ascendancy of theirs and the growing pains that come along with it. If you really care about Justin Verlander as a Tigers fan, not you, but anybody in a general sense, you got to be very happy for him right now.
Absolutely, and I look forward to being able to watch him pitch in the postseason, which is just amazing to watch. And it's not something that we would have gotten the opportunity in Detroit to see this season. So I think you're absolutely right. For him to have been held back almost and to kind of force himself through that rebuild process, yes, he would have been great for those young up-and-coming pitchers as kind of a guiding force. But, like, the really romantic baseball part of me wants to think that once he's done those two seasons in Houston, he comes back and, like, spends the last season or two of his career in Detroit as, like, a third starter, guiding the young folks and, like, ending his career where he started it.
Yeah, I can understand that, certainly. We're talking to Ashley McLennan, who covers the Tigers for BlessYouBoys.com and SB Nation website. Jim Cushlin is with us, too, Ashley. Jimmy, go ahead.
And since it's almost been 2 weeks, but we really haven't dived into the nitty-gritty of some of the guys that they got back in this deal, go over some of the guys they got back and how important it was for them to get the financial situation. I remember that was the big thing that held up Justin from being traded at the July deadline, and that's why he ended up going in this August deadline. It's not the whole thing, of course, but the Astros were willing to eat a good chunk of that money. For those who've been under a rock, explain how that part went down, because it almost didn't. There was these last-minute tweets I was seeing from all sorts of people. No, he vetoed the trade. Then 10 minutes later, 10 minutes before, no, he's okay with doing it. Walk us through how that happened, especially the money part, because that was the biggest thing, I feel anyway, that kept holding this up in July.
Yeah, there was a lot that went on. I mean, we were all watching it right down to the wire, and it wasn't going to go. And then there was mixed signals as to whether it was him doing his trade out where he was like, no thanks. And then there was alternate theories that said the Astros were the ones who had balked on the deal. And, I mean, honestly, we're probably never going to know how that went because it did go right down to the last couple minutes. I think what I heard, too, is that he initially really wanted to go to the Cubs. But the Cubs just didn't have the prospect power to make that deal a reality for the Tigers. the Tigers actually came away really, really well on this trade. They're putting in $8 million a year of his what would have been $28 million for the team. So the Astros are picking up the other $20 a season, and the Tigers are chipping in $8 on top of that for the next 2 years. His 2020 like buy-in option is no longer in play. So I think it was like if he placed top five for the Cy Young, he got another season. And so that's no longer an issue. And the Tigers actually got three really solid prospects out of the deal as well. The biggest one, being Franklin Perez, who's a pitching prospect. They also got Daz Cameron, who is a center field prospect, and Jake Rogers, who is another pitcher. And Perez was the huge get out of that and one player that they really didn't think the Astros would give up. But I think he ended up being kind of a make or break part of that deal. So the Astros finally yielded. And picking up pitching prospects is a lot more, kind of in the Tigers' wheelhouse. I think we're a little confused by all of the infield guys they picked up in recent deals. But part of that is the desire to rebuild the farm. So really they've done a great job in adding in every position here. And I think as a result, their farm number has jumped from like the low 20s up to like 13 or 14 in the whole system. So it's been a great couple of weeks.
Ashley, play marketing director for the Tigers now. Sell season tickets to fans for 2018. What do you say?
I think the focus, and I mean, Al Avila did send out a letter to season ticket holders. I think it went out the day before the Upton and Verlander trades went through. And it was an honest and kind of open, heartfelt letter to the people that make or break the Tigers' big bucks. And he said, look, I know it hasn't been a great year, but we've shifted our focus and we really want to see the future and kind of build from within. And he kind of laid it all on the line, which I thought was a really refreshing thing for a GM to do. To admit that it hasn't been great and to say, stick with us. And I think that's part of the key for the Tigers is going to be like, come see the future, like see these guys as we build them into the future superstars. But another thing that I think would serve them really, really well in 2018, 2019 is to pick up maybe like a free agent, like a Doug Fister, or to pick up a cheap kind of on his way out name player. I'd love to see Curtis Granderson come back for a season. Just those guys that aren't going to like help you win a championship because they're not going to, but these name recognition guys that'll bring people back in from when they remember the good old era of Grandy playing center field and when they remember the like 10 straight strikeouts Fister got. And I think that's going to be a key to selling more tickets next season.
Jim Cushion's got one more question for you.
You know, and let's look at some of those kids, for example, Jaimar Candelario, who was brought over in the Vila and Justin Wilson trade. For what it's worth, 10 games, 34 bats, he's at .382. You got Dixon Machado, one of the only farmhands that was actually here before all these trades. He's sitting at a .279 clip, already 140 at bats. They're bringing up some of these other younger guys, though there's not much in the way of the starting pitching right now. That'll eventually get there, but how do some of these guys fit when they first start, especially when they start fresh next year? Perfect example, I'm hearing grumblings that they may have Nick Castellanos take some outfield practice on the grounds of, no, we want Candelario to be the future third baseman. How do you see some of these kids mixing in as we go forward, particularly into the offseason and then into spring training and beyond?
Well, Nick did play some outfield in Toronto during the Toronto series. I do see that as his long-term position because he defensively is, I mean, useless is a really not nice way to phrase it, but he's not great at third base. And defensively, I don't think Candelario is a massive improvement, but he's certainly a step up. I think you're going to see guys like Lugo, Della Lugo, come in playing either, he's been playing a little bit of second base in the minors, so you may see him as a future replacement for Kinsler. I think Candelario might be a long-term replacement at first when Cabrera moves to the DH position after Victor retires. So, I mean, there's a lot of people you can kind of slot in there. Paredes, I think, has some third base reps under him. So, and then you've added these new pitchers. I mean, I've been pretty interested in seeing what Miles Jay has put up during his few starts in the highly augmented Tigers rotation. But it's going to be pretty ugly for the next couple of seasons while they kind of figure out who can fit those roles and who can manage those positions long term.
Go ahead. I was just going to also ask about, in addition, one of the younger guys, of course, on the staff, but he's already been here, Michael Fulmer. Now, he had surgery today with Dr. James Andrews, which, of course, always makes the hair on everyone, the back of everyone's neck stand up.
That's true.
But it should be noted, it was not like an elbow reconstruction or Tommy John or anything. It was a nerve kind of thing. There's no structural damage, but he's going to be basically shelved until midwinter.
Yeah, it's a 3 to 4 month comeback on it. It's an ulnar nerve translocation. So basically he was experiencing some slippage of his ulnar nerve, which was leading to numbness in his fingers, but not all of them, just some. So he was only really noticing it on one or two of his pitches. So they just realigned that nerve. It's not like Tommy John where they have to wrap a tendon. It's not as involved. So it's a 3 to 4 month turnaround, and they do anticipate he'll be back for spring training. It apparently went off fine. Kevin Rand announced it. That it appears to have been a success. So we'll see how his rehab goes over the winter.
Ashley McLennan talking all things Tigers with us. Kind of a Tigers recap to the season, since the season is essentially over for them, even though there's two weeks plus of baseball to play. But we know where things are. So really good stuff, Ashley. Thanks for breaking it down for us. Not a bad job, by the way, playing marketer and trying to tell season ticket holders or Tigers fans why they should still be season ticket holders next year.
I hope they still come.
There you go. I hope they do, too. Hey, Ashley, thanks very much. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
You got it. Let me shift gears from the baseball talk to football once again. Cannot wait for week number two in the National Football League season, in part because there are some great, great games, but mostly because of FanDuel and fantasy football on FanDuel, and an opportunity to win money by identifying the week's biggest fantasy studs. Listen, if you're playing on your own and just entering different contests, that's great. But let me give you some advice. You really want to kind of jack up the fun level. Play in a listener league or play in a league with friends. You can form your own leagues within FanDuel. That way you can also just be a winner against the guys in your league, or you can just play against the field. And you got to find the best players. Now, I told you before, you expected Matthew Stafford to be a fantasy star, and he was. 4 touchdowns in the comeback win over the Cardinals. You didn't expect Kareem Hunt, former Rocket, to be a fantasy star in week one, but he was. 3 touchdowns and 246 yards in the debut. If you can identify the studs this coming week, you could win some big bucks. That's what FanDuel allows. Fantasy football for everyday fans gives you a chance to identify the guys that you think are going to be best each week, and each week you start out with a new roster. That means no busted seasons. And contests, well, they start at just $1. That's right. So you could play as a beginner or you can play as an expert, and you could really, really up the stakes and you could win money. As a matter of fact, over 2.5 million players have won a cash prize playing fantasy sports the FanDuel way. That's right. Go to FanDuel.com. Click the Join Now button. Use my code France. New users like you, you'll get a free entry. Do you get many free things in life? No? Well, here's one. Use it. Free entry into the NFL Sunday Million. That means over $1 million in cash prizes when you make your first deposit on FanDuel. So go to FanDuel.com. Sign up with the promo code France. That's FanDuel.com. Promo code FRANTZ. It's void where prohibited. All right, coming up on the other side, we are going to talk a little college football. We go from baseball to pro football, not a college football. The head coach of the Bowling Green Falcons, Mike Jinks, will join Jim Cushion, talk a little bit about the loss to South Dakota, 0-2 on the season. Big Ten Northwestern foe coming up at Northwestern on Saturday. How will the Falcons get ready for that? Well, we're going to talk to Coach Jinx about it right here, coming up on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
And welcome back into the extravaganza. Jim Cushlin here. Time to talk some college football, as we do on a weekly basis for everybody here in the region. Now it's time to talk some Bowling Green Falcons football. They fell to South Dakota, an FCS school, in the Dwight opener this past Saturday, 35-27. Northwestern on the road is coming up next. And to talk about all things Bowling Green football-wise, we once again welcome in the head coach of the Bowling Green Falcons, Mike Jinks, of the program. Hi, Coach. How you doing?
Right, Jim, and you?
Not too bad, but probably a little bit better than you guys. A 35-27 fell in the home opener this past weekend. We're going to start there against FCS South Dakota. You kind of warned us about this when I talked to you last week, that this is, despite being an FCS school, this is a high-powered team. They could do a whole bunch of things on offense. And, boy, did they sure do some of that to you guys back on Saturday.
Yeah, they did a good job. Hats off to them. But, you know, bottom line, not acceptable. You know, you can't get down 21-3 regardless of who you're playing and give yourself a decent chance to win the ball game. Gave up too many explosive plays on the defensive end. Offensively, we moved the ball decent. We were 5-5 in red zone possessions. But, again, when you get in the red zone, especially when you're behind those, you got to get touchdowns into the field goals. So, as we talked about last week, we got a long way to go. We're still building this program. The thing that people have got to understand is that, you know, when you lose some of the talent level that we've lost over the last couple of years, it takes a little while to replace that. Now, that being said, the talent is here, it's young, and it's just got to quit making mental mistakes and beating ourselves, I should say.
And how you go about fixing some of those mistakes? Is it just a thing of the young guys have to learn by making those mistakes, or what?
They got to get reps. They got to get in there, and they got to get game experience. We've spoken, several times over the last few days, and really the key to this football team this year is we're going to have to win two out of the three phases, offense, defense, special teams. Special teams is one phase where I think we're going to have an advantage in most games. You know, we had two kids, you know, returning for the first time. They didn't make the mistakes they made against Michigan State. We got, not only did we lose that special team phase, but we gave up 14 points. And again, you cannot do that, you know. Probably other than, you know, our performance, the thing that I was most disappointed in is we had a great crowd. We had a great crowd, Jim. Now we challenged these guys to come out and get behind the football program. And there was an energy, there was a buzz. Talking to my wife after the game, so the parking lots were full. So frustrating, but sun came up, and we got to continue to fight, continue to improve, and find a way to get better.
We're talking with head coach Mike Jinks of the Bowling Green Falcons. 35-27, the Falcons fell back on Saturday at the Doit against FCS South Dakota. And you mentioned going down early. I'm looking at some of the numbers. 520 total yards your defensive squad gave up. And you were just alluding to some of those things that have to be corrected as we go forward. What, if anything, positive are you able to take from this type of game?
Not a lot positive, you know. It's all about getting a win and at the end of the day. But the performance of T.O. Redding, I know Datron Dyke had a lot of yards, 150-some-odd yards, this, that, and the other, but T.O. made a ton of clutch catches and with guys hanging all over him. It was good to see him healthy and stepping up, and really Kyle Jr. did a good job on the defensive line. They continued to play. We got down on self-inflicted mistakes. Things that are correctable, 21-3, and we continue to chip and chip and chip and fight our way back in the ball game instead of just laying down and getting run out of the building. So, if anything, they continue to play. Hopefully they've learned a lesson that no matter who we play, we're not good enough to spot anybody 21 points.
No doubt about it, Coach. Talk to me about Jace Morgan's performance over in this one. 21-50, 315, two touchdowns and a pick. Obviously, having to lead offensively, going to the air more with the early deficit. Talk to me, though, about his performance.
Well, all in all, James was adequate, is how I would describe it. We had pretty good balance in the first half. I think we were 20 runs and then 21 passes. We were able to, I felt like, just wanted to be sure, as schematically, that told those guys to stick to the run, because Josh Cleveland's having a decent ball game. Came out early in the third quarter. We the second drop kick, and we went down 18 or whatever it was again. And at that point, it was about 5 or 6 minutes late, and we had to throw the ball a bit more than we wanted to. Other than the big pick at the beginning of the second quarter, James did some good things. He's still got a ways to go, and still a work in progress.
Talk to me about later on in this game. Granted, it was a 28-9 South Dakota at one point, but for what it's worth, late third and through the fourth quarter, you guys did outscore, by my count, 17-3. What changed offensively and especially defensively in that sequence?
Well, we got a couple stops. We caught a couple stops, and James got hot, and he didn't make some of the, he adjusted to some of the things that they were doing. We made some good halftime adjustments offensively. We truly, the guys truly did, and we were able to find some holes in the defense. And once we got in the red zone, the kids made plays. And at the end of the day, that's what it's all about.
We're talking with head coach Mike Jinks of the Bowling Green Falcons here on the Extravaganza on the Ticket. Jim Cushlin here. Let's look ahead now. A couple of road games to close out of conference play these next couple weeks at Northwestern of the Big Ten, and that at, then at Middle Tennessee, a tough Conference USA school before you come back to the door at the end of September for the MAC opener. I was talking to you last week or two about barometer situations for the Falcons and how they could best be measured, obviously coming off of these two types of losses, going back on the road to some tough opponents. What kind of barometer will we be able to get from some of these type of games coming up?
Well, you'll see what we're made of, I tell you that. And, you know, it's going to test our character and our will, you know. But that's what football is, and that's life, you know. And all you can do as a man is go out and compete and come to work every single day. And there's no doubt in my mind that we'll do that. Like I told you, Jim, we're a deeper team than we were last year. We're a more talented team than we were last year. When we got into, you know, the second big game, American game against Memphis, we really laid an egg. You know, the challenge of putting this game at Northwestern was to go out there and play 60 minutes of Bowling Green Falcon football and compete at a high level, and let's see what happens. So, again, like we talked to the coaches about all week long, I'm not looking for these kids to do anything spectacular. I want to put them in situations to be successful and to make plays, and let's continue to grow.
It's Northwestern on the road this Saturday, 7:30 the kickoff time, 6:30 the coverage time, by the way, over on Talk Radio 100.7, your home of the Falcons here in Toledo. Northwestern, kind of a hard team to read, honestly, Coach, after two games. That they get a home win against Nevada and then go on the road to ACC's Duke, not where they were a couple years ago, and then you remember it's Duke and we're in football season, and they get beat up by Duke. What, after two games and probably watching some film, have you been able to gather on these guys?
Well, you know, they're probably pretty frustrated going into this one. I think they had just jumped in the top 25 and really went to Duke, and Duke got after them a little bit. And Duke's a very talented team. They've suffered some injuries, Jim. I think they lost two of the corners. They had a safety that missed the first half of the game because of a targeting penalty. They lost their leading returning receiver for the year. You know, so they're going through some growing pains as well. Still got a ton of talent. You know, Justin Jackson is probably one of the better backs. Not, no, probably about it. He is one of the better backs in the Big Ten. And you know, the quarterback has been there, done that, played in a lot of games. And if you give him time, he can surely beat you. So, you know, we're going to have to come ready to play. We're going to have a solid plan. We have to find a way to slow Jackson down and not give up the deep ball. So, got to work cut out for us.
Yeah, no doubt about it. It is at Northwestern is where the Falcons are off to next for their Week 3 game. Decently tough Big Ten opponent on the road. 7:30 the kickoff time coming up on Saturday. 6:30 the coverage time. You can hear all the action, of course, of the Falcons over on Talk Radio 100.7. Coach, best of luck out there on Saturday. Let's hope we're having some more different and happier talk when we reconvene next week.
Appreciate it, man. Thanks, Jim.
That is head coach of the Bowling Green Falcons, Mike Jinks, taking a few minutes to chat with us here on the Extravaganza. And yeah, it's one of those, you heard kind of Coach say it, that, you know, things aside, trying to improve the program, changing things to get back to a winning attitude. At the end of the day, though, that, as he said, that type of game, unacceptable. You can't be losing. Let's put it this way. Doesn't matter where you are in terms of building a program. It doesn't matter which level you're at, major or mid-major. Let's call a spade a spade. If you're a Division I-A FBS school, it is unacceptable to lose home or away, whatever, to an FCS 1AA school. And that's what happened. Now, South Dakota, they crushed their first opponent, put up 70-some-odd points. You could see some of the flashes in that as they went up to a 21-3 lead early. But a lot is shooting themselves in the foot, as you heard kind of Coach elaborate on it and allude to. Mistakes early on, especially putting them in that hole that ultimately the Falcons were not able to get out of. Now, again, this is a program that trying to turn things around, trying to get back to the winning ways that we're all used to around here when we talk about the Bowling Green Falcons. But this game, more than any, it proves how much of a work in progress
this really is going to be. I still firmly believe record-wise we're going to see a better team than we did last year. Last year ended up 4-8, but if you recall, it was 2-8. Heading into some of those final game, or 1-8, I should say, heading into the final games of the season last year, 1-3 in a row to make the record a little more respectable. I still expect to see that kind of 4-8, 5-7 kind of year when it's all said and done. But obviously there's some growing pains offensively, defensively, and just getting some of these younger guys in there, as Coach said, to get some of these reps. We're at a point where with the Falcons where these mistakes, like we saw on Saturday, are going to end up having to be made on the field because you just need the reps in order to get that experience that one would need to progress farther in a big-time college football environment, even if this is the mid-major level. Was encouraged to hear how it was a fun, festive atmosphere, though, for the home opener, and I hope there's some more things festive for the Falcons these next couple weeks. These are tough opponents on the road at Northwestern this Saturday. Then the Saturday after that, it's off to Middle Tennessee. They're a Conference USA team, and I know realignment in recent years has kind of decimated the Conference USA to the point where I firmly believe the Mid-America Conference is a better, superior conference, but that's still a tough team that's been to a couple bowl games in the last couple of years in Middle Tennessee, then back home to start MAC play against an Akron team that's kind of in a similar position to Bowling Green. Hasn't been doing well, trying to rebuild some things on the program, so they didn't start as far behind. Bowling Green didn't start as far behind as an Akron does, for example, but they're obviously going to make some more mistakes as this season goes forward, as these next couple of road out of conference game against tough opponents go forward. I mean, I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but we might be looking at an 0-4 Falcons team heading into that final game in September against Akron. It is entirely possible, as this I don't think it's going to be, again, as long of a season as at times last year felt like. But there's just no way of sugarcoating this. The Falcons lost at home to a 1AA school this past Saturday. It is what it is, and now this team has to pick themselves up and go forward. And hey, that's going to do it for this edition of the Extravaganza. Thanks so much for hanging out with us for these last couple hours today, but don't go nowhere. Mike Miller on Drive Time. Yes, Mike Miller back in the big chair for Drive Time. He's coming at you next for the next hour. A little bit later tonight, the High School Football Forum with Bill Clark and the crew to go over everything that happened this past Friday, what's coming up this Friday for high school football. And then when we reconvene tomorrow, we will indeed find out if the Cleveland Indians have tied the American League record with 20 wins in a row. It is Corey Kluber for the Indians on the mound tonight, so odds are in their favor, no doubt about it. We'll talk about all that and more when we reconvene tomorrow. Drive Time, Mike Miller is next. See ya.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep their trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.